This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it is a big week for the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine. Today, the FDA deemed it safe and effective, and it appears to be more effective than originally reported against these newer, more infectious variants, which brings the vaccine a critical step closer to being authorized for emergency use. Here's Governor Charlie Baker at a press conference this morning.
On the same day to have Johnson & Johnson's vaccine deemed safe and effective by the FDA, and to have Moderna and Pfizer say they would double their vaccine production in March over the level of vaccine production they did in February, is a really positive development in so many ways.
Now, Johnson & Johnson says it could have 20 million units of its single-dose vaccine available by the end of March. Dr. Dan Baruch is the director of the Center for Virology and Vaccine Research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. His lab helped design the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Dr. Baruch, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So how good are you feeling today?
Today's a really good day. We're very excited about the new updated data released by J&J this morning, as well as the FDA review, independent review of the data that deemed the data set to show safety and efficacy.
We talked about this efficacy against the new variants when you were on the show at the beginning of the month, and you just referenced the new data. Were you surprised that there were numbers that came out that showed the vaccine to be even more effective against those variants than earlier thought?
Well, what we have now is a larger data set because there are more infections now in the study than there were a month ago. So this represents the data up to date as of now. And with a larger data set, then we see improved efficacy against the resistant variants, the so-called B1351 variant that originated in South Africa, as well as the P1 and P2 variants from Brazil.
So did that surprise you?
I was very pleasantly surprised, but I think it's very important, not only because those are areas of the world that we need to protect, but also those variants are also circulating in the United States as we speak.
You talked about the fact that basically as you get more numbers, right, you get more information. Does that mean, because obviously case numbers unfortunately are going to continue to grow, does that mean those numbers could change more either for better or for worse over time?
Well, the data set is large now, and the study has reached its primary endpoint. There will be, of course, continued follow-up in the clinical trials. So there could be updates of the data, but I think that the data set today is a very robust data set, and it will be reviewed by the FDA External Committee on Friday. If FDA approves the vaccine, then it will be rolled out starting potentially as soon as next week, and it would then be the third vaccine rolled out in the United States.
Okay, I have to go back and ask you then again. That's a vaccine for the coronavirus. This is a public health crisis of 100 years proportion. How does it feel to have dedicated your talents to help creating something that could be on the market helping people next week?
It's an amazing feeling. It's truly surreal. We've worked on this vaccine essentially every day over the past year. And we're delighted that it appears like it's reaching fruition. And what's most important now is the vaccine, if it's approved, to be rolled out and to start saving lives. I haven't quite had too much time to reflect on it. There will be time for that in the future. But right now, there's a job to do. And we hope that the vaccine can be deployed and start saving lives as quickly as possible.
So I want to ask you a bit of a complex question. We know that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in testing had a lower overall efficacy rate than Moderna and Pfizer, but it was 100% effective against hospitalization and death in trials. And Moderna and Pfizer weren't tested against the new variants, and Johnson & Johnson is a single dose. All of that is to say, obviously, everybody wants as many doses of as many vaccines out there as we can get. How do you tell people to think about the differences between the vaccines, especially when they may not have a choice in which vaccine they receive?
The most important thing to realize is that all of these vaccines are very safe and very effective. And so what we need now is we need to accelerate the vaccine rollout. Currently, we're in an era of vaccine scarcity. There's simply not enough vials of vaccine to immunize everyone in our country today, let alone the world. And so the most important feature about the J&J vaccine is that it's going to be another vaccine with a large manufacturer to increase the vaccine supply and increase the pace of the vaccine rollout. I think that the fine differences amongst the different vaccines are difficult to ascertain because the vaccines were not tested head-to-head, and particularly the trials now involve a large fraction of either more contagious or resistant viral variants. So overall, I would say that the most important thing for people to realize is that all of these vaccines are very safe and very effective. And the most important thing is to get vaccinated.
And on that note, that is Dr. Dan Baruch, the director of the Center for Virology and Vaccine Research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. His lab helped design the J&J vaccine. Dr. Baruch, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. So WBUR Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg was listening to that conversation. Carrie joins us now. Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you, Tiziana.
So let's just start by getting your reactions to what you just heard from Dr. Baruch.
I feel like putting together what I heard from Dr. Baruch and from Governor Baker, there's a whole lot of vaccine coming down the pike, and that is really good news. And in particular, this, you know, very likely third vaccine looking like it's just around the corner. It's one that offers excellent protection, and it has major advantages like being easier to store. It works with only a single dose. And I would underscore what Dr. Baruch said, which is that, you know, people talk about vaccine shopping. And I would say the public health advice is very clear, which is that all of these vaccines that have been approved are great. Just get any vaccine that you can.
So I hear a tone of optimism there. Help us get our heads around how big an impact it would have to have this third vaccine, single dose, maybe as many as 20 million doses available at the end of next month if it's approved for emergency use. How big a deal is that?
Well, I mean, we need multiple vaccines, right? No single source can give us enough. And the way I think about it is that basically this is what the federal government has been predicting for a while, which is that there would be enough vaccines for the general population to get the shots in spring going into summer. But, you know, with this pandemic, you never know about predictions. And so I'd say, like, right now, it's looking even likelier that that will really come to pass and that just about everybody who wants to get vaccinated will be able to in the coming weeks and months.
So Governor Baker talked about this in a press conference this morning about the arrival of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and we heard at the top, hopefully increased supply from the federal government on the other vaccines. He said, quote, we might end up with enough vaccine to actually service the capacity we already have in place, end quote. But this federal supply question, put it in perspective. How much is it the rate limiting factor? If we had all the vaccine we needed right now, could we in fact get it into people's arms effectively?
Well, I think the federal supplies are a rate-limiting factor. I mean, they're not the only one, but they're a huge one. Like Governor Baker said today that the state has demand for about 450,000 doses a week, and it's only getting about 130,000 doses. So that's a big gap, and it could truly make a significant difference if the state gets more vaccines, as it now seems is promised. And as for whether we could get the vaccine into everybody's arms effectively right now, I mean, we're in the midst of a phase that includes a million people, right? So no, not in a day or a week, but this phase is expected to last through April at least, and we're watching the capacity to administer the vaccines ramp up, including today with the opening of the Natick Mall site. Like, I keep thinking it's like World War II when French farmhouses turned into strategic objects. You know, there would be soldiers fighting from the farmhouses. And suddenly our malls are turning into strategic objects in our war against the virus.
It really is something. All right. So I know you know the Baker administration is being called to testify in front of a new legislative oversight committee on Beacon Hill tomorrow. What do you think that's going to accomplish? Will it help?
Well, I certainly think it will be cathartic for a lot of people who are really mad about the technical snafus of the vaccine website rollout. It'll be you know, really gratifying to see lawmakers ask some tough questions of the Baker administration. And also, I'm really hoping we'll get some answers to questions that are really mystifying. Like the biggest one many people are asking is, how can it be that a state that is so smart and high tech could do so poorly with its vaccination signups, at least initially, and especially with that user interface, which I swear it seemed to have been designed by the devil. It was very sadistic. And I'm hearing that people are still having quite a bit of trouble with specific sign-up sites like Walgreens. So I think it will be a great chance just to ask burning questions that are not yet fully answered.
Okay, so that's all vaccine stuff. We spent a year tracking cases, infection rates, deaths, all still critical metrics. What's the headline over the last few weeks there?
Well, the headline, mostly it's a heartening, dramatic drop in cases and deaths. But a Harvard epidemiologist put it very nicely earlier this week. This is Bill Hannage on Morning Edition.
It's certainly premature to think that we are out of the woods. We're not out of the woods. We're just in a somewhat less densely woody part of the woods.
Which is a better part of the woods to be in, right? But we're not out. And Tiziana, there's some more good news just out today about the state's nursing homes. The Massachusetts Senior Care Association says residents and staff have gotten more than 125,000 vaccine doses. And compared to last May, the daily infection rate is down 94% and daily deaths are down 87%. So we're seeing much lower rates in the settings that have been by far the places where there were the most deaths. So it's really good.
So, Carrie, I want to jump to a more meta question here, which is about the disparities laid bare by this pandemic, both in terms of vulnerability to the virus, now in vaccine availability and distribution. You know, we've had discussions around those disparities. They continue to gain volume and steam. Are we making, you're a healthcare reporter, you've been doing this a long time, are we making any of the changes in our healthcare system that are going to be necessary to reduce those disparities going forward?
Well, it's such a big question, Tiziana. I mean, certainly it's been heartening to see how much of a focus there's been on disparities. And I have to say, the problem clearly isn't just in our healthcare system. It's in how people live and work much more broadly. And the pandemic brought those disparities to the fore as never before. And I'd also just add that by far the biggest disparity of all in illness and death was in long-term care. And the state was already taking measures to bolster nursing homes, but we'll see whether the fact that something like 1 in 7 residents there died in this pandemic will bring on more change. That's something I'll really be watching.
All right, before we let you go, you have been such a friend mm-hmm. to Radio Boston over the years, especially this past year. And our listeners probably don't know you're leaving us at the end of this week to become the Boston mm-hmm. Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. So this is my last chance to ask you, what is going through your mind 1 year into this?
1 year into this. Well, Tiziana, I'd like to just take a moment to gloat. It's maybe hard to believe at this moment, but I would like to gloat about how right I was to become a health and science reporter 20 years ago. You know, back then, it seemed to me that progress in science, including biomedical science, was just the most important news in the world, because it so fundamentally changes the human condition when you, say, figure out the structure of DNA or you map the human genome. And that was why I wanted to cover it. And now it's looking like we're seeing science basically save the world, you have to say, with these vaccines. It's science that goes back decades and really centuries. And so for all the sorrow and the ugliness we've seen in this pandemic, I also see it as highlighting sort of the fundamental nobility of the mission of science to figure out the secrets of nature for the betterment of humankind. So I just want to say at this moment, see, I told you so. I was right to become a health and science reporter.
That's inspiring. All right, we have a little less than a minute left. Anything else you want to reflect on?
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. You know, Beth Tytel in the Boston Globe recently had a great story about how much we lose when we work remotely and we don't get to see our work friends like you. And over the past few days, as word has spread that I'm leaving WBUR, I felt just this outpouring of what I can only describe as love, as sort of collegial love. It's this special love between people who work together. And we don't necessarily hang out together, but when we work together, we admire each other and we're comrades and we're teammates. And lately I've been struck by how truly that is a form of actual love, a beautiful kind of fellowship love that we don't tend to talk about very much, but it so enriches our lives. And I'll miss you. I'll miss all of the Radio Boston team. I love you guys.
Carrie, I love you. Thank you for everything. I'll miss you too. That is Common Health editor Carrie Goldberg.
Thank you, TCR.
All right.